Saturday, the 24th of July, 2010. I'm going to be killed because of a family called the Gilpatricks. There are four of them. Mother, father, son and daughter. Elise, Donal, Reardon and Tilly. Kit tells me their first names, as if I'm keen to dispense with the formalities and get to know them better, when all I want is to run screaming from the room. Reardon's 7, he says. Tilly's 5. Shut up! I want to yell in his face, but I'm too scared to open my mouth. It's as if someone's clamped and locked it. No more words will come out, not ever. This is it. This is where and how and when and why I'm going to die. At least I understand the why. Finally. Kit's as frightened as I am. More. That's why he keeps talking, because he knows, as all those who wait in terror know, that when silence and fear combine, they form a compound 1,000 times more horrifying than the sum of its parts. The Gilpatricks, he says, tears streaking his face. I watched the door in the mirror above the fireplace. It looks smaller and further away than it would if I turned and looked at it directly. The mirror is shaped like a fat gravestone. 3 straight sides and an arch at the top. I didn't believe in them. The name sounded made up, Kit laughs, chokes on a sob. All of him is shaking, even his voice. Gilpatrick's a sort of name you'd make up if you were inventing a person. Mr. Gilpatrick. If only I'd believed in him, none of this would have happened. We'd have been safe. If I'd only... He stops, backs away from the locked door. He hears the same footsteps I hear, rushing, a stampede. They're here. 1 week earlier. Chapter 1. Saturday, the 17th of July, 2010. I lie on my back with my eyes closed, waiting for Kit's breathing to change. I fake the deep, slow sleep breaths I need to hear from him before I can get out of bed. In and hold. Out and hold. And try to convince myself that it's a harmless deception. Am I the only woman who has ever done this? Or does it happen all the time in houses all over the world? If it does, then it must be for different reasons, more common ones than mine. A cheating wife or girlfriend wanting to text a lover undetected, or sneak one last guilty glass of wine on top of the 5 she's had already. Normal things. Ordinary urgencies. No woman on earth has ever been in the situation I'm in now. You're being ridiculous. You're not in a situation. Apart from the one you've brewed in your imagination. Ingredients. Coincidence and paranoia. Nothing I tell myself works. That's why I need to check, to put my mind at rest. Checking isn't crazy. Missing the opportunity to check would be crazy. And once I've looked and found nothing, I'll be able to forget about it and accept that it's all in my head. Will you? It shouldn't be too long before I can move. Kit's usually dead to the world within seconds of the light going out. If I count to 100... But I can't. Can't make myself focus on something that doesn't interest me. If I could, I'd be able to do the reverse. Banish 11 Bentley Grove from my mind. Will I ever be able to do that? While I wait, I rehearse for the task ahead. What would this bedroom tell me about Kit and me if I didn't know us? Huge bed. Cast iron fireplace. Identical alcoves on either side of the chimney breast, where our 2 identical wardrobes stand. Kit-like symmetry. One of his reservations when I proposed buying the biggest bed we could find to replace our ordinary double was that it might not leave room for our matching bedside cabinets. When I said I'd be happy to lose mine, Kit looked at me as if I was an anarchist agitator plotting to demolish his well-ordered world. You can't have a cabinet on one side and not the other, he said, both ended up going in the end. Having first made me promise not to tell anyone, Kit admitted that, however inconvenient it was to have to lean down and put his book, watch, glasses and mobile phone under the bed, he would find it more irritating to have a bedroom that didn't look right. "Are you sure you're a genuine, bona fide heterosexual?" I teased him. He grinned. "Either I am, or else I'm pretending to be in order to get my Christmas cards written and posted for me every year. I guess you'll never know which is the truth." Floor-length cream silk curtains. Kit wanted a Roman blind, but I overruled him. Silk curtains are something I've wanted since childhood. One of those, as soon as I have a home of my own, pledges I made to myself. And curtains in a bedroom have to pool on the floor. That's my look-right rule. I suppose everybody has at least one, and we all think our own are sensible and other people's completely ridiculous. Above the fireplace, there's a framed tapestry of a red house with a green rectangle around it that's supposed to be the garden. Instead of flowers, the solid colour of the grass is broken up by stitched words. Melrose Cottage, Little Holling, Silsford, in orange, and then, in smaller yellow letters beneath, Connie and Kit, 13th July, 2004. "But Melrose isn't red," I used to protest before I gave up. "It's made of white clunch stone. Do you think Mum was picturing it drenched in blood?" Kit and I called our house Melrose, for short, when we first bought it. Now that we've lived here for years and know it like we know our own faces, we call it Mellors. What would an impartial observer make of the tapestry? Would they think Kit and I were so stupid that we were in danger of forgetting our names and when we bought our house? That we decided to hang a reminder on the wall? Would they guess that it was a homemade housewarming present from Connie's mother and that Connie thought it was twee and crass and had fought hard to have it exiled to the loft? Kit insisted we put it up, out of loyalty to our home and to Mum. He said our bedroom was the perfect place, so that then guests wouldn't see it. I don't think he notices it anymore. I do. Every night before I go to sleep, and every morning when I wake up, it depresses me for a whole range of reasons. Someone peering into our bedroom would see none of this, none of the wrangles, none of the compromises. They wouldn't see Kit's missing bedside table, the picture I'd have liked to put above the fireplace if only the hideous red house tapestry weren't there, which proves that looking at a room in someone else's house doesn't tell you anything. And there's no point in my doing what I'm about to do, now that I'm sure Kit's sound asleep. I ought to go to sleep too. As quietly as I can, I fold back my side of the duvet, climb out of bed, and tiptoe to the second bedroom, which we've turned into a home office. We run our business from here, which is a little absurd, given that it's about 11 feet long by 10 feet wide. Like Kit's in my bedroom, it has cast-iron fireplace. We've managed to cram two desks in here, a chair for each of us, three filing cabinets. When our certificate of incorporation arrived from company's house, Kit bought a frame for it and hung it on the wall opposite the door, so that it's the first thing that catches your eye when you walk into the room. "It's a legal requirement," he told me when I complained that it looked uninspiring and bureaucratic. "Has to be displayed at company headquarters. Do you want Nulli to start life as an outlaw?" Nulli Secundus Limited. It means second to none, and was Kit's choice. "Talk about tempting fate and dooming us to failure," I said when we were discussing what to call ourselves, imagining how much worse liquidation would feel with such a conceited name. I suggested C&K Bowskill Limited. "Those are our names," Kit said scathingly, as if this fact might have passed me by. "Have a bit of imagination, for God's sake. Confidence would help too. Are we launching this company in order to go bankrupt? I don't know about you, but I'm planning to make success of it."